How many of you were here last night and heard Craig? How many of you were here last night? Outstanding job. And Craig, where are you? Okay. Craig, would you stand up just for a second here? How many of you saw the picture of his church and the very formal vestments that they wear? How many saw that? Okay. We want to welcome you to the West Coast, although you're here every year, and we actually got you some vestments to wear in your church. So next year when you come back, we would like a picture of you in the Presbyterian Church with West Coast vestments, and here they are. What do y'all think? So, how many of you think this is going to work? How many of you are Presbyterians and think he's going to be fired? Okay. Now, if you've got your notes out, if you were a teenager, would you raise your hand? If you're a teenager, raise your hand. Oh, down in the front row. Way to go. Here's the deal. I am going to speak on raising G-rated kids in an X-rated world, and some of you teenagers are going, first of all, if you're a teenager, raise your right hand and repeat after me. I will take notes. Because someday, I will be a parent, and God will get me back for everything I've done to my parents then, okay? Actually, if you are a teenager or you do not have kids, I want you to take even better notes because every single thing I say about impacting your kids, you teenagers can apply to impacting your friends and your school for Jesus Christ, okay? Got it? Okay? I also want to say this. If you're a dad, would you raise your hand? Okay, good. In your honor, we have put together a little video that we showed at our church on Father's Day. Let's roll it.
This is Dad Life. It's how we live 24/7, 365. Check me. Gas station glasses, don't care what the masses think about me with my sweet goatee. I'm rocking my Dockers with a cuff and a crease. I got that St. John's Bay and the clip for my piece. I look nice, I got dozens of dollars and that's right. It goes straight to my daughters and my wife. I'm a miracle dad, making magic with the checkbook is a talent I have. I roll hard in the yard with a 60-inch cut. Zero turn radius, my neighbors say, what? They be driving by, peeping my landscape. Yo, these greens got nothing on my manscape. Hydrangeas, begonias, crepe myrtles,
ornamental turtles.
Hold up, is that a weed in my fescue? Oh, nah, Roundup to the rescue.
It's the dad life, it's the dad life. Take my daughter to the party, it's the dad life, it's the dad life, it's the dad life. Shooting vids of the kids, it's the dad life. Roll up to the splash pad, 10 a.m., my whole entourage hops out the minivan. We splishy splashy for an hour or two, then it's back to the house, prepping for the barbecue.
Brats, dolls, racker ribs, whatever. Get me on the Weber, man, nobody does it better. Call me Lord of the Grill, I'm king of the coals. Nana's secret recipe, you know how I roll.
1080p, 16 by 9. I'm rocking man cave status with a screen like mine. Keep your peanut butter hands off my 50-inch Vizio. Pop up the corn, roll the Disney video.
We got Aladdin, Jasmine, Abu, the genie. With kids like mine, everybody wants to be me.
Sing a nightlight song and then it's off to bed.
This is the dad life, no more to be said.
It's the dad life, it's the dad life. Hit the mall, coaching ball, it's the dad life. It's the dad life, it's the dad life. Playing rough, fixing stuff, it's the dad life. It's the dad life, it's the dad life. Yeah, you know how we do it, it's the dad life.
Could we have every dad in here stand up for something they will never get again? That's a round of applause. Dads, would you just stand up for a second? All right, that's enough of that. Here's the deal. When you think about parenting kids, I actually read one guy, and he said, raising kids is easy. And he said, matter of fact, I don't even spank my kids anymore. All I have to do when any of my kids misbehave, no matter how bad the fit was they threw, he goes, all I have to do is take them on a simple drive, have a conversation, and for months afterwards, they behave like angels. And then he said, let me show you a picture of one of our recent drives. So it's not all that complicated. Now, I want to back up one, and I'm going to get real serious for a minute and take a quick survey. How many of you here, you have young kids, 5 and under? Where are you? Oh, wow, ton of you. Okay, it's like having bowling alley installed in your mind. How many of you have got kids that are elementary age kids? Okay, awesome. How many of you have junior high students? Oh, very cool. Wow, a ton of you. How many of you have high school students? Oh, we'll have a prayer meeting afterwards. How many of you have college-age students? How many of you raised kids? They're gone. Hey, don't cheer. The teenagers are in it. Now they know how you really feel. How many of you raised kids? They were gone, but now they're back. Yeah, we have a couple of those. We call them boomerang kids. We keep throwing them away. They keep making their way home. Now, I actually want to start by saying this. I believe, if you're a high school student or a junior high student, walking with God right now is harder than it has ever been. I believe raising G-rated kids is harder than it has ever been. And this is not on your notes anywhere, so you can look up here, jot it down if you want. I spent about 10 years teaching adolescent development in a college and in a graduate school level. And I started going, why is it that today's teenagers, it's just so much tougher to build and develop them? And then it took about 3-4 years. We did a study of every generation since 1950, and we realized Americans, as a culture, have lost one thing in every decade for the last 7 decades that you actually cannot afford to lose. And I'm going to walk it through. In the 1950s, Americans, by and large, as a culture, we lost innocence. We lost innocence, and teenagers were liberated from their parents by music, movies, and Hollywood started shaping the way everybody in America thought and the way they acted and reacted. By the way, would you agree with that? In the 50s, innocence went out, never to return. Now, how many of you were here for this next decade, the 1960s? How many of you remember the 60s? Okay. In the 1960s, Americans lost authority. They lost authority. That matter of fact, the catchphrase was this, trust no one over 30. That was in the 1960s. Authority went out the window, and that kind of reverence and respect for authority has never returned. Now, in the 1970s, who was around in the 1970s? Anybody get married in the 1970s? Okay, you have embarrassing wedding pictures, don't you, with wild tuxedos and all of that kind of stuff. In the 1970s, Americans lost love. The 70s were tagged the me decade. Remember that? Okay. And free love. And here's what happened in the 1970s. Americans went through a sexual revolution, and Americans starving for love settled for sex. And it's been that way ever since. Now, how many of you were around for the 1980s? 1980s? What did Americans lose in the 1980s? All sense of style. All sense of style. Matter of fact, see the middle picture there? That is Bayside Church's worship leader, Lincoln Brewster, when he was with Journey in the 1980s. Okay, in the 80s, what did Americans lose in the 80s? They lost values. They lost values. The dominant movie in the 1980s was the movie Wall Street, starring, anybody know? Michael Douglas, who played a character named Gordon Gekko, whose famous speech summed up the 80s when he said this, greed is good. That was the 1980s, and Americans lost values. In the 1990s, what did Americans lose? They lost faith when the Oklahoma City Murrah Federal Building was bombed, Columbine happened, and Americans basically lost faith that our country was a safe place to be. And one writer in the 90s said this: for the first time in human history, Americans are realizing they are safer in the wilderness than they are in civilization. Okay? Now, in the year 2000, the last decade, how many of you are around for that? Better be unanimous here. Okay? In the year, in the last basically 12 years, what have Americans lost? They lost a sense of security. The 2000s begin with Y2K. Remember that? Then what happens is 9/11 hits 1 year later. The economy collapses, and Americans lost security and all sense that everything was going to be okay. Now, the last couple years, what is this new decade shaping up to be? And I think here it is. I think in the 2010s, Americans feel like they are losing hope. The economy collapsed. Studies of teenagers are now showing most teenagers do not believe their life is going to be better than their parents, and that is a first in American history. Now, if you summarize that, check it out. Okay, we'll summarize. Americans in the last 7 decades have lost innocence, authority, love, values, faith, security, and hope. And they are no longer getting those things from our culture. Now, I want to ask a real quick question. Do you need those 7 things in your life? Yeah, nobody lives well without innocence, authority, love, values, faith, security, and nobody lives well without an underlying sense of hope. I actually think the Christian faith is going to look really good in this next decade because there is nowhere else people can turn for those 7 things. It also means, though, we are raising the first generation of teenagers minus all of those things, which is why it's like building a fire in the rain. And so what I want to do is I want to direct your attention to, I think, the best verse in the Bible on parenting. Here on the top of your outline, and get your pen out, get a pencil out, get ready to take some notes, circle some stuff. I'm going to be talking really fast and covering a ton of material. It's going to be like taking a drink from a fire hose. So about every 5 minutes, I'm going to say, are you still with me? And you will say, yes. Even if you fell asleep, wake your husband up and have him say yes. So we're going to practice that. Are you still with me? Good. Okay, here we go. Would you say this verse out loud with me on the top of your outline? Children are a gift from the Lord. Just stop right there. Circle the word gift. The Bible says this. Children are gifts, not punishments. And then it goes on and it gives the best metaphor for how to raise kids I've ever. It says this. They are like what? Arrows in the hands of a warrior. Okay, so the Bible says this. Children are like arrows, and that's all you need to know about how to raise kids. How do you raise kids? The same way, same thing you do with an arrow. What do you do with an arrow? You shoot it, okay? Now, actually, here's the deal. Write down 3 words, okay? Number one, the first thing you do with an arrow is you give it direction. In other words, you take that arrow, you put it in the bow, and you aim it. That's providing direction. The first task of parents is to provide direction and aim, okay? Then what do? You have to actually pull it back. A lot of parents are going, I aimed it and I let it go and it didn't go in that direction because they never pulled it back. That's providing motivation. We'll come back to that in a second. And then the third thing you do is you what? You let them go, and off they go to college or to work, and off they head out of there, okay? Now, what's interesting is this. Most American parents are really good at the first and really good at the third. And no, here's the deal. You can provide all the direction you want, but during the teenage years, by the way, teenagers, do you already know every lecture from your parents before they open their mouth and deliver it? Absolutely. Okay, and what happens is this, during the really young years, when your kids are like, okay, 2, 3, 4, 5, they need a lot of direction. During the teenage years, it is the time to pull the bow back. They need more motivation during the teenage years than they need directions. Does this make sense? Okay, and the problem is this, most Christians, by the way, I actually think Christians are the best direction people on the planet. Every parent, we got lectures, we give direction. You go to church, here's more direction. You go to Sunday school class, here's more. We are the kings of direction. But if people aren't motivated, they will never go the direction, which is why a lot of kids, the minute they get out of their house, they go in all kinds of different directions because they were never motivated to go in the direction that their parents and probably God wanted them to go. That makes sense? So I just want to ask and answer one question today. If you're a teenager, how do you motivate your friends to go in good directions with their life? How do you impact your friends for Jesus? If you're a parent, how do you raise kids so that they are internally motivated to go after the stuff you hope they're going after? Okay? And so I want to start by saying this. Five things not to do. Okay? Do not, and just jot them in. Number one, do not lose your cool. Do not lose your cool. Teenagers in here, are parents, well, let me ask you, parents, are your teenagers good at causing you to lose your cool? It's like a sport. Teenagers invite their friends over, and they go, watch mom, and they push a button, mom explodes. It's like a game, okay? Do not lose your cool. I actually, some of the best parents I've ever met were in Seattle. I flew into Seattle to do a parents' conference, and this couple picked me up, and they were a ton of fun. I'm in the back seat of the car, and they're driving me to the speaking engagement. We're going through downtown Seattle, and the wife turned around, and she said, this is where it happened last week. And we're in kind of a bad area of Seattle, and she pulled up to a light, and she said, it was right here. And I said, what happened? She said, I was driving with my teenage daughter last week. And she said, I looked out the window, and I saw something, and I went, honey, duck. And I pushed her down, and I sped about three blocks and then pulled over. My daughter's down going, what is it? Somebody with a gun? Is what? We're going to be robbed, carjacked, what? And she said, my daughter's one of those too cool for life kids, you know? And she said, so my daughter got back up, and I said, I'm so sorry, honey. I just glanced out the window, and I saw a good friend of mine, and I couldn't bear to be seen with my teenage daughter. Is that awesome or what? Number one, do not lose your cool. By the way, y'all still with me? Good. Okay, number two, do not delay living until your kids turn 18. Do not delay living until your kids turn 18. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace. I know so many parents that are going, oh, no, my kids just became a teenager. I'm going to be on task. I am going to be as miserable as it takes and on them every second of every day so that they end up attracted to my faith and values. Brennan Manning said it best. If you have the joy of the Lord in your heart, please notify your face. That is a great line, okay? Do not lose your cool. Don't delay living. By the way, parents, keep going out on dates. Keep screwing around. Keep throwing mom in the pool and living to tell about it. Don't delay living. Number three is this. Do not let your teenager intimidate you. Do not let your teenager and you, high school and junior high kids, don't let your friends intimidate you. One social scientist said this. We are the first society in human history where the elders of the tribe look to its younger members for what the standards of style and expected behavior should be. How dumb is this? Okay? Don't let them. I love the dad in our area who met his daughter's first ever date at the front door with a running chainsaw. One of our staff guys, a guy named Judd Boyce, he's our director of operations at Bayside, has two beautiful twin daughters. They're now 20. His first daughter's first date, the boy came and picked them up, and the boy started walking out with her, and Judd said, hey, wait a second. The kid turned around, and Judd said, catch. And he threw him a bullet. And the kid caught it, and Judd said, you don't treat her well, the next one's going to be coming a lot faster. Is that awesome? What? They're in a lawsuit now, but it was good while it started, okay? Don't lose your cool. Delay living. Let them intimidate you. Number four, do not rescue your children from consequences. Do not rescue your children from consequences. Don't be deceived. The Bible says you reap what you sow. Okay, we had a parent. Well, I was a youth pastor years ago. This mom came in to see me, and she's like, my son is driving me crazy. And I said, why? She said, every day he leaves his lunch at home, and every day I have to drive it to school. I made up a statistic. You know, it takes 67 days of missing lunch to starve to death. She was training her son that his actions didn't have. And if actions don't have consequences, then why not screw up your life if somebody else is going to pay the consequences the entire time? Okay? Do not rescue them. And number four is this. Number five, do not underestimate the power of a positive parent. Don't underestimate the power of a positive parent if they have an alive faith. I love this. Get ready to circle some words. I have been reminded of your sincere faith, which first what? Circle the word lived in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I'm now persuaded lives in every study I've seen, every single adolescent study, the number one determining factor ultimately in how kids turns out is their parents. Every study I've seen. And my question is this, is your faith alive enough to catch? And let me get, by the way, for those of you who are going, man, my kids, it is up and down like all of us, okay? I got four kids. Now that they're off parole, I'm feeling better about this. But a friend of mine in Marin County had a wild son named Sean. And I mean, this kid was just like a bull in a china shop. Big kid, football player. I mean, just out of control kid, ended up tossed in jail a little bit for partying and drinking. And this kid ends up, and his dad had become a Christian. So his dad tried to lead him to Christ, and Sean basically blew him off. And Sean went up. So you know what his dad did? His dad basically said, I'm going to be positive. I'm going to pray for my son. I'm going to positively share my faith. I'm not going to be on his back. I'm going to be on his side. But I'm just going to pray for this kid. And he did that. The kid goes to Sac State and parties his way through 5 years of Sac State. The last semester at Sac State, he's walking across Sac State and he runs into another guy from our church, and they recognized each other because they'd played football against each other, probably got in a fight at one time. And Sean goes, hey, Gary, and they have this conversation, and he says, what are you doing? Gary goes, well, here, sit down, man. So they sit down, and he goes, you're not going to believe this, but Sean, I've become a Christian. I'm following Jesus. And for whatever reasons, 5 years of prayer, where Sean was, whatever, Sean listened to everything he had to say, prayed with him at Sac State, gave his heart and life to Jesus Christ, and committed his life to Christ. He went back to his apartment. Guess who the first guy he called was? He called his dad. You ought to hear his dad say this. His dad said, Sean called me and said, Dad, are you sitting down? His dad said, what now? He goes, Dad, I just prayed, received Christ. I'm a Christian. His dad said, call me when you're sober, and hung up on him. Called him back. You know what? Sean is now a pastor in the Bay Area, okay? Never underestimate the power of a positive parent. But these are five things not to do. Now, let me flip it. By the way, y'all still with me? Okay, good. Let me flip it and give you six things that I think will help impact people and raise the bar, okay? And number one is this. Provide a motivational environment. Number one, as much as possible, provide a motivational environment. Okay, and you know what's interesting? This gets overlooked. Jesus, check it out. A few days later, the people heard that Jesus was home. So many people gathered there that there was no room left, not even outside the door. Okay, now just real quickly, I want to give you three things that provide a motivational environment. Number one is this, atmosphere matters. Atmosphere matters. If you're jotting something down, just jot it underneath there somewhere. Atmosphere matters. Okay? Whether somebody's uptight or gracious, whether somebody's fun to be with or not. I ask my wife this once a year, and only, I'd say, Carol, am I more fun to be with this year, or have I become more uptight? We have a big fight, and then I ask her a year later, okay? But that's actually a pretty good question to ask yourself. Am I enjoying God, enjoying life, and what's the atmosphere of our home? If you're in a church, what's the atmosphere of a church? Wouldn't you agree, you can feel the atmosphere of a church the second you walk in. And by the way, don't you love walking into Mount Hermon? Okay, why? Atmosphere. And redwood trees, and the beach. Number two is this, attitude matters. Atmosphere matters. Second is this, attitude matters. And the third thing that matters is this, the stages your kids are in matter. The stages your kids are in matter. Now, I want to do a little mini adolescent development course, And so this is not going to go on the screen, so I'm going to have you memorize some words, but this is going to explain why kids act like they do. Stephen Glenn, who I think is the sharpest adolescent development writer, says this: all human development happens in three stages, okay? And so a little test here. Human development happens in three stages, okay? So how does it lay out? He says from 0 to 5, from birth to 5, who's got kids that age? Okay, good. It's a time of discovery. Stage 1 is discovery. And you got little kids. What are they discovering? Fingers, toes, mom, dad, the world. When our son, Mark, was 4 years old, we had about a 90-pound golden retriever. Mark walked up to our golden retriever, pulled both of his ears, and discovered what it was like to be run over by a golden retriever. Okay? So the first 5 years are a time of discovery. Okay? Then, from about age 6 to about age 9, they move from a season of discovery to the second stage, which is testing. They move into a time of testing. Now, what are they testing? What they've previously discovered. In other words, I mean, how many of you have kids that are 6 to 9, okay, and how many of you have been in the hospital with those kids? Why? What happens if I ride my bike into the pool? What happens if I ride my bike off the roof? What happens if I stick this fork into that wall sprocket? In other words, they are testing, okay? So now stage 1 is discovery. Stage 2 is testing. And then about age 10, Stephen Glenn says, they move into third and final stage of human development, and it is awesome, okay? It's conclusions. And he said from 10, 11, 12, sometimes even to 13, they have drawn conclusions. They enter full childhood. And he says, man, the happiest people in America are all 10 years old. Wouldn't you agree? 10 years old can be home on Friday night, no date, no problem. There are no 10-year-old atheists, okay? If a 10-year-old kid breaks the rules in the class, what does the whole class do? They rat on the kid. Okay? Does that happen in high school? No. I'll tell you why in a minute, okay? But they've drawn conclusions, and Stephen Glenn says 10-year-olds are happy little campers. Wouldn't you love to freeze everybody at that age and just keep them that age? I mean, it's an unbelievable age. And he said, until one terrible thing happens. Puberty hits and wipes the whole thing out. And he says, now, they have entered full childhood. Puberty hits, wipes the whole thing out, and all of a sudden it dawns on kids, whoa, I am not going to just be a child. Someday I'm going to be an adult. Can they? Now, it took 3 stages to get them to full childhood. They have to go through the same 3 stages to enter full adulthood. So they go back, and basically, here's the deal, back into junior high, and they go into a time of discovery. That's junior high, okay? That's why a lot of junior hires are so insecure, okay? Because they're walking around all day long going, do you like me? Do you like me? Who am I? You know, all this kind of stuff. I mean, they go up, down. A junior high kid, hey, I got a boyfriend at breakfast, broke up by noon, new one by dinner, okay? They're in a time of discovery. Their antenna are out. It's actually why junior high is my favorite age group. They're in a time of discovery. I was a junior high pastor for a while. They'll run through that wall. You got to go first, but they'll follow you. Okay? Now, junior high is an awesome age, and it's a time of discovery. Okay? And then what happens is this, but that doesn't last, because then about their freshman or sophomore year, they go from a time of discovery to a time of testing. Mom and dads, what are teenagers testing? Everything. Rules, limits, everything, okay? I mean, dad says, be home at midnight. Kid comes home Tuesday just to test what's going to happen. I had a mom come into my office when I was a youth pastor. She walked in, sat down at my desk, and just started crying. And I said, what's up? And she said, my son came home and said he doesn't believe in Jesus anymore. And then she fell apart and said something about him going to hell. Okay, and now her son was a sophomore, so he is in testing. Okay, I looked at her and I said, now, I know this kid. I was close to this kid. I was discipling this kid. This kid was on our student leadership stuff. He's going on mission trips with us. All this guy. He had not lost his faith. What was he doing? Testing mom. Can I say what I want in this house and have a conversation? Can I? All this kind of stuff. I looked at her and I said, your son came home and told you he doesn't believe in Jesus anymore? Yeah, he's going to hell. I said, that's great. Then she said something about my eternal destination, okay? And I went, your son has not lost his faith. He is just what? Testing. Now, here is the problem. The message of the church to teenagers is this. Don't test. God has wired them up to test. The church's message is don't test. Okay? And what's interesting is this. Teenagers are wired to test. Rather than the church telling teenagers not to test, okay? Now, I'm not recommending Lowenbrownite, okay? What I'm saying is this. We would be better to shape what teenagers test. Does that make sense? And I'll come back to that in a second because it's a really big deal. I think teenagers, the high school years, high school kids, where are you? Okay, test your faith. Okay, share your faith. Test your spiritual gifts. Go on a mission trip. Test that. Fly to Africa. Go on some, build a well. Do some, in other words, test your spiritual gift. Test your faith. All that kind of stuff rather than waste your life and wreck your life testing alcohol, drugs, and all that other kind of stuff. Lots of teenagers have went to test something and discovered it wasn't a test, it was an addiction, and it wrecked the rest of her life. If you're a teenager in here, you're wired to test. Be smart about what you test. Does that make sense? I'll come back in a second. Now, okay, stage one is discovery. Stage two is testing. And stage three then is they draw conclusions and move on. Okay? And I think it's really smart to know what stage are they in and how do I create a motivational environment for that stage. So I'll give you an example of this. When my daughters were high school juniors, okay, that puts them into what stage? Testing. You know what I did? I yanked them out of school for 6 weeks. How do you think the school felt about this? You can't do that. I'm like, I can do that. I'm their parent. You're not. Well, we won't get money for every day they're here. I'm going, I don't care. By the way, my theory is never let school screw up an education. And so I yanked them out of school for 6 weeks, and we went to Africa and went on mission trips. And then we went to Paris and Rome and London and a couple other places and stayed with people and did some ministries in those countries. And then we came back and went to Newport Beach for a week because that was God's will. And sent them back. Why did we do that? We did that because they are in a season of testing and I wanted to shape what they test. Does that make sense? Okay. Number one is this. Provide a motivational environment and study your kids. I mean, by the way, you teenagers, if you want to lead your friends to Jesus Christ, one of the questions you ask is this: what is a great motivational environment I can bring them to? Okay, what's a killer motivational environment? Mount Hermon's got camps and retreats, all that kind of stuff. You get them in the right environment, it's just a matter of time. Okay, number one, provide a motivational environment. Second is this: expose your friends, if you're a teenager, and expose your kids to significant experiences. Expose them to significant experiences. Jesus spent very little time in a classroom and spent a lot of time creating experiences for the disciples. Hey, let's get in a boat, go to the other side of the lake, and maybe drown. In other words, he created a lot of experiences, okay? And let me give you an example of that. I live in Granite Bay, California. Anybody heard of or been to Granite Bay? Okay, it is like Beverly Hills. It's gated community. If you play for the Kings, you probably live in Granite Bay. It's the wealthiest area in Sacramento. We have a church in Granite Bay, and every year we haul tons of teenagers down to Mexicali, Mexico. And we were a little tiny church. We started going down there. It just kept getting bigger. Okay, every year I have Granite Bay parents coming up to me saying, I don't know if I can let my daughter go to Mexico. Can you promise me it will be safe? Well, how would you answer that? Look at not a chance. Okay? But I say, I can promise you this. Your teenager, the way they're wired, they will be safer having enough guts to go into a foreign culture and go down there and serve the poor and minister to people and build homes for poor people and here have chapel every morning and every, they will be far better off. It's much safer to raise them there than to raise them here without them ever being exposed to those kind of things. Okay? Our teenagers went down there this year, and we had, you can get in real trouble when you let teenagers make their own videos. So we said to these teenagers and some of the staff, make a video of your week in Mexico. Okay? It was so wild, I probably wouldn't have shown this in a Presbyterian church, okay? I even debated it, showing it mine, because they took a song with some really bad lyrics and flipped it around. And so here at at Mount Hermon for the first time is party rock. Let's roll it. I was down in Mexico, and I spoke on Monday morning at that thing. And afterwards, this really cool freshman girl who had a sophomore brother came up, tears streaming down her face. And she said, what do you do if you're an atheist? And I sat down with her, and I said, remember, there are no 10-year-old atheists. I said, you weren't an atheist when you were 10 years old. She goes, no. And I said, so what happened? She goes, well, my parents are Christians, but they scream at each other and yell, and our home's a mess. And so I thought, whatever they got, it can't be true. And she said, but now I'm down here. And she goes, and I think God's real, and I want to worship, and I want to serve. But my brother is also an atheist, and he's my best friend. And if I give my heart to Christ, I'm afraid my brother won't talk to me. And I'll lose my best friend if I start following Jesus. And I went, that's awesome. Because you get to decide whether you mean it or not. And and Easter Sunday morning, 5 days later, right stage right here, her brother and she both received Christ down there, and they are both standing there in church with their arms raised worshiping. And I'm standing looking at this with tears streaming down my face. And I thought, there's something during the teenage years. Teenagers need to be exposed to all kinds of high-octane experiences. That makes sense? Okay? And those of you that are teenagers, you want to impact your campus for Christ, haul your friends to stuff like that and just watch God get turned loose in their life. Now, there's a third. Here we go. Y'all still with me the other way? Okay, good. Number three is this. Point them to the future. Point them to the future. I love how therapeutic Jesus was when he said these words, neither do I condemn you. But he didn't stop there. He says, now, go and leave your life of sin. In other words, he is saying, man, nobody moves forward well when they are looking back. Nobody moves forward well when they're looking back. Teenagers are going to be best when they're not condemned but pointed to a future. Number four is this, develop dialogue. Develop dialogue. And there's all kinds of ways to do that. With my sons, I took them out to almost any place they wanted to eat every other week, and we talked about whatever they wanted to talk about. With my daughters, we do daddy-daughter date nights. Matter of fact, my daughter Leslie and I just did one and spent 2 days in Newport Beach just hanging out, which means I spent insane amounts of hours at the mall. And Leslie, like, you want to go look at shoes? Yeah, let's go look at shoes. You want to go? I mean, how many of you, malls are guy kryptonite? Would you agree? Okay. And you're like, you're limp. But you know what? If it's with your kid, develop dialogue. We also, at meal times, by the way, I have a confession to make. You know those family devotions? Do you do those? Does anybody here do family devotions? We see it, we read the Bible as family, all this kind of stuff. Okay, I tried it. It didn't work. Okay, and I'm a pastor. It should have worked. Okay, I gather my family. We're going to do a family devotion. Like 3 minutes into it, I'm going, shut up. We're talking about the joy of the Lord. Shut up. Okay, and I thought, how many of you have had a similar experience? Okay, and I went, it just didn't work. Okay, so what? your family, huh? Okay, where are your parents? Point them out. No kidding. You know what's interesting about this? So what I did at mealtimes instead is when they were little, I just asked questions. I'd walk in and go, who wants a question? And we never recovered from that. okay? Develop dialogue, shared experiences. Our kids, my kids are now 23, 21, and 20, and we still do Easter egg hunts. How many of you high school kids are too old for Easter egg hunts? Come on, it's going to be almost all of you, okay? In there, okay? You know what we did? We just switched. You know those plastic eggs? We took the candy out. We stashed them with cash. How many of you teenagers would now go on an Easter egg hunt, okay? In other words, anything you can do to develop dialogue, connection, things like that is going to be a good thing, okay? Number five, integrate Christian service into their home. Integrate Christian service into the home. And number six is this. Give heavy, heavy doses of encouragement. I love, Jesus said, no longer do I call you slaves, but now I call you friends. Keep your notes out for a second. If you want, there's a ton of resources on the back. I want to close by saying that. Would y'all look up here? I got a quick question. Has anybody here ever been to O'Hare Airport in Chicago? Okay, big mistake, right? Don't go there, okay? Years ago, my wife and I were traveling with when I think Mark was about four and Scott was two, and we flew cross-country with Mark and Scott, spoke at a deal, flew back to Chicago, and we landed in a place called United Terminal C. Anybody know what I'm talking about? It is the furthest terminal known away from man. You got to go to this underground bizarre drug thing to get there with these lights. And by the way, I got a question. Why do, with everybody's fear of flying, why do they call those things terminals? That's a whole other ballgame, okay? Anyway, we land after, matter of fact, the flight coming back was miserable. But by the midway through the flight, both kids start screaming. Flight attendants are coming up going, would you like to play outside on the wing with your kids? And so we finally land. We get off. Now, it's insane amounts of people in this terminal. We get off, and about a minute later, I turn around, and I said to Carol, where's Mark, our four-year-old? And Carol said, I thought he was with you. And I said, I thought he was with you. And she said, I thought he was with you. And, you know, we play that game. And then we figure out, well, he's not with either one of us, so who's he with? And then we start looking for him, and in about 2 minutes, confidence gets replaced with sheer terror. Have any of you ever lost a kid in a supermarket or a dryer or freeway or something? We realize pretty fast this kid's not with either one of us. And so I race out to the front of this terminal, and I am checking every kid coming by. And every scary, morbid thought about kids that were kidnapped, mutilated, sold, never seen again is rolling through my head. I mean, I am just filled with sheer terror, but I'm comforted by the fact this kid has got to get by me to get out of here. People have kidnapped kids in airports and changed their appearance and walking by. And so for about 5 minutes, I'm checking every kid. And then it dawns on me. There is not one exit from this airport. There are 38 gates. This kid could be on his way to Kuwait for all I know. And this is pre-9/11, so they're not checking anything. And so I race back to the terminal. At the same time, my wife was awesome. She ran up to the United Service Center, cut in line all the way in front. She walked up there, and with tears streaming down her face, she said, we lost our son. And folks, these United employees were awesome. They got on some microphone into some back room, and they said to Carol, color hair, color clothes, color eyes, color shoes. And they said that some code, the door explodes open, and I mean flight attendants and pilots and sleeping government employees come racing out of the room. And in about 2 minutes, they have stopped everything they're doing, and they are ripping up and down the terminal, all of them doing one thing, looking for our lost son. And I'm crying now, okay? I come running back in. Carol's crying. I come running back in, and I go, what's happening? And then I see all these people running all over the terminal. And so we join them. We're looking. And about 3 minutes later, through my tears, I see the best sight I've ever seen. I look down at the end of this terminal, and I see two United flight attendants walking our direction. One of them's holding the hand of this really killer blonde-haired, brown-eyed kid. And the other is handcuffed to his other hand. Okay? And as they get to me, I thought, he was lost. He must be really shook up. What do you think? Not. I pick him up and I'm crying. I go, are you okay? And he goes, Dad, you ought to see this plane down there. It's huge. Come on. I'll show you. I'm thinking, I'm going to kill this kid. And as I was emotional all the way out of the airport. I grabbed his hand and I'm walking out of the airport. And it was, you know how thoughts can go through your head really fast, except during church? As we walked out of the terminal that day, and I'm holding his hand, two thoughts hit me. And 20 years later, I'm still thinking of them. Number one was this. My son was lost and in danger. But he had no clue he was lost and in danger because he had walked away from his mom and his dad. Would you agree? Doesn't that describe well the generation of teenagers in America? They have walked, some of them, and it's tragic. The minute somebody walks away from their heavenly father, they end up lost and they end up in more danger even if they don't know it. The second thing that hit me was this. I didn't find my own son. Somebody else heard he was lost, stopped all the less important things they were doing, and went out with one purpose, to find my lost son, take him by the hand, and walk him back into the arms of his mom and a very grateful dad. I believe this. When you love your kids and teenagers, when you love your friends and you walk them back into the arms of God, someday you are going to arrive in heaven. And you know what's interesting? It's the middle of a terminal. Two flight attendants are standing there. I'm holding my kid. I'm crying. Carol's crying. And we're looking at these flight attendants, and all we could say, guess what we told? We said, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You've made our lives. Thank you. Someday, if you invest in kids and you bring people into the arms of Jesus, you're going to arrive and Jesus is going to be holding everybody that you loved, raised, cared about, befriended, and went after. He's going to be holding this and tears are going to be streaming down his face and he's going to be looking at you saying, thank you. Thank you for going after it. Thank you for being faithful. Thank you for raising your kids. Thank you for walking your kids into my arms. Teenagers, he's going to be saying to you, thank you for making an impact on your junior high and your high school campus. And I just want to wrap this up by asking one question. Why would you want to live any other way? Would you bow your heads and close your eyes? If you're here this morning, just shut out everybody around you. I can't walk people back into the arms of Jesus until I'm walking with him first. And some of you in here, you may have walked away from Jesus Christ, or you may have not known him in the first place. And you may have arrived at Mount Hermon, and I don't care how you arrived here. But if you're going, man, I would love to walk out of this meeting area this morning knowing I'm forgiven, knowing I've got a new start, knowing Christ is in my life, knowing that God is central. I would love to live in the presence and power of God. I want his plan. I want his best for my life. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm coming to Jesus this morning. I want to know I'm forgiven. I want a clean slate and a fresh start, and I want Christ at the center of my life. If that's what you want, Jesus says these words, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. I got a brand new future for you. You can receive that right now where you sit. I'm going to pray a very simple prayer. And if this is what you need, pray with me. I'll pray out loud. You pray with me silently. Pray with me if this is what you need this morning. Lord Jesus, thank you for loving me enough to die on a cross. And I believe you died on a cross so that I could be forgiven. And I believe you rose from the dead so that I could have life and a relationship with you. And I pray right now that you would forgive me for all my sin. all of it. I let the past go. And right now, I receive you into my life. Come into my life. Be my Savior. Be my Lord. I'm coming to you this morning, or I'm coming back to you. Give me a brand new start. I choose to follow you. And with your heads bowed and your eyes closed and nobody looking around, this is you and God. I would love to pray for you this morning. If you prayed that prayer with me, that the rest of your life would end up being the best of your life. So if you prayed that prayer right now, would you just raise your hand? Just put your hand up. Man, there's a ton of you. Put them way up. Awesome. Way to go. Way to go. Good job. Outside. Good job. Way in the back. That rocks. Lord, thank you for these men and for these women. Would you wrap your arms around them? Help them to know the joy that comes to people who are freed from their past and the hope that comes to people that don't walk alone. In Jesus' name, God's people said, amen. Hey, I know, again, this was like taking a drink from a fire hose. Thanks for listening, and give Dave a Mount Hermon welcome.